That loneliness truly is something that everybody feels. If you feel lonely, that you should act upon it and reach out to those who you love and be like, "Hey, I feel alone in this and I don't understand why, and I should find the causes of this and understand why I'm thinking these ways." Hello, everybody, and welcome to the ninth episode of Stuff We Don't Learn in School. My name is Jenny Zhu.
I'm Victoria.
Have I ever said my last name before? That's felt weird. Okay, well, and today's conversation will be centered around the topic of loneliness, which is, I think, very timely for this time period. If you happen to be a time traveler and you're in the year, say, 2025 or 2027, given the fact that we haven't deleted these conversations by then out of cringe. We're recording this currently, December 19th of 2020, in the midst of feeling the effects of the pandemic in the United States. I know other countries are almost completely back to normal by now, but we're still hanging in there. The horizon of the vaccine is soon, but loneliness is something that has kind of influenced the lives of every single person in this world at this point. So we wanted to talk about it. Victoria, how would you define loneliness?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm not gonna lie, like I would generally say, in terms of identifying emotion and feelings, that's not necessarily my forte to begin with, but how I view loneliness kind of in my life and where I see it pan out is I think it's one of those things where it might be hard to articulate because it manifests itself really differently with different people and it's caused by different things, whether it's like cultural barriers or whether it's just the amount of connection you need to feel fulfilled, different things like that. Mm-hmm. But I think my definition would be, you know it when you feel it. And if you think you're lonely, or if you think, I guess you're experiencing loneliness, then you probably are. Maybe it's like one of those things where it's intuitive, to the person. Like I know in different points, like so far, maybe, you know, the times I've been objectively doing the best, I might have felt the most lonely, like the most, like I couldn't really reach out, or I didn't feel as if I was really connected to other people, even though everything else was pretty good. And the times that I wasn't doing so hot, like I felt, I think, the most grounded with relationships and like everything was strengthening. So I think it's highly individual. But that's also the thing with, like, at the beginning of quarantine, my parents and I were walking around North Park and that became kind of like a habit. And I listened to this one podcast about loneliness. I don't remember what the episode was. Maybe it was like Freakonomics, but they were just saying a loneliness is just such a hard thing to do research on because like how you frame your research just depends on how you frame what loneliness is. And
yeah.
And depending on your definition, of course, like one out of three people, I think that's like the famous statistic, can experience loneliness. But if you define it some way else, I mean, maybe it's just less people. So
yeah, no. There's, I was doing some research before this podcast, and I haven't ever thought of loneliness as having multiple definitions. And so there are two types of loneliness. So there are two types of loneliness that kind of present themselves within every single person. First would be social isolation. So this is what we define as being physically alone. You know, this is what everybody has been experiencing throughout the pandemic. And the second definition of loneliness is true loneliness. So that is just the state of feeling that nobody feels the way that you do, or that your feelings are unique to yourself and you have no support system type thing. It's more of like a mental loneliness. So obviously I think a lot of people in the pandemic are feeling social isolation and feeling alone in that regard, but are not feeling as lonely as what they're experiencing, because they understand that so many other people in their community are feeling that as well, right? But I think everybody at some point in our lives have felt that kind of, that true deep loneliness. And it's difficult. It really is. I think we all think of that part of being alone as like, I guess, like a low point per se, like not having like that kind of support. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say I'm naturally a lot more independent. I like my own space. I like, you know, giving other people the same space. So naturally, I don't really mind not having as many interactions. But there's like a clear differentiation, I think, between liking solitude, which is just the state of being alone and being okay with it, versus feeling lonely.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the times the two are conflated, where sometimes you like being alone and you generally, you don't feel disconnected. And, you know, sometimes you might feel like there's something wrong with me, but no, that's just you enjoying solitude. But on the other hand, sometimes you actually are lonely and you're like, no, I just like solitude. But it's like, no, you don't, like, you're just lonely.
No, it's like that differentiation between the two. Like, they're like, obviously you can tell a difference whenever you're, you know, vibing with, say, you know, the office with a bag of chips on your side.
Yeah,
and being
exactly.
Like, oh, just me, myself, and I. This is, like, me time.
Right. I love me time.
Exactly. Versus, like, nobody's going what I'm going through, and I don't really know what to do with myself because nobody can advise me. Like, there's obviously such a distinct difference between those two, but there's also a lot of overlap and gray area where it's,
yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know whether or not it's a good thing that I'm kind of alone with my thoughts right now, or if it's a bad thing and I need to reach out to somebody and see if somebody can help me.
Yeah, because so much of our experiences are based on only what we know. So a lot of the things I've been thinking about recently, and for a lot of high school and kind of like my life, was just like, are the way my relationships set up, is that the norm? It's not like I need to be the norm, but if I'm lacking a support system, like, I want to know. Like, I want to just see kind of how other people's lives sort of pan out and how their relationships are structured, just to see the differences between maybe, like, me and someone else. Because also given, like, there are kind of cultural roots in loneliness in the sense of, like, my parents immigrated from China to America. Mm. So inherently, because of the cultural difference, which a lot of people are really familiar because a lot of people immigrated here, there is already kind of a sense of there's like a lack of understanding between you and your parents, because there's not only a generational divide but also a cultural mm-hmm. one, and then you and almost, it seems like, the rest of the world, where it becomes almost like us versus them. And I know, Jenny, you've talked about this too, with like accent discrimination or just not, you know, wanting, like, not being able to commit to either side of being American or being white, or like,
yeah,
that sort of thing. And that's like a pretty common experience. And I think also playing into like personality, that also affects like kind of how you view it. And I just mentioned it, but one thing my brother told me one time as we were like traveling to Seven Springs, and keep in mind the car ride is an hour long, so it's pretty lengthy time to go through that. He said something, and I think I relate to it a lot, and I think this just goes to show, right, you can be successful, quote unquote, or whatever you define it as, you can be in a relationship, you can be working and doing things you actually like and also simultaneously feel lonely. It's not either or.
Yeah.
He was saying how, you know, sophomore year, he was student council president, and he knew a lot of people, and, like, because he was campaigning and stuff, and naturally he's just more outgoing and things like that. And the one thing he told me was, you know, that year, whenever I entered the lunchroom, I felt like I could sit with everyone but nobody at the same time. And I think at some points in my life, I've felt that too, where I've been, I think I could be friends with almost everyone in our grade, but at the same time, not really. Like, I don't think I actually know them or I actually could. Mm-hmm. And that sort of contradiction is, I think, what makes loneliness for a lot of people, I mean, especially for me and my brother, at least in this case, just a tough thing to navigate. Because, I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, I think everybody's support system looks different for, you know, every person. Like, it's really just fluctuation between relationships that you have, right? Like, my relationship with my parents is completely different than my best friend's relationship with her parents, or your relationship with your parents, or just everything like that. Relationships between friendships are completely different too.
Like, yeah.
My relationship with you is different from, say, my relationship with Anna, my best friend, or Ashna, my other best friend, or Tulasi, right? Like, these are, like, although they're all kind of equal in intensity and equal in love and, like, compassion, they're just different. So you're going to get something different, some different support from every single person around you. Or you're going to find support in just completely different people no matter what. Like, I also have another friend who, she doesn't have a great relationship with her parents. And she finds little support value from her friends. But she has found an amazing amount of support through her teachers. And so that's just another kind of way that she gets out from that loneliness, gets away from that mental isolation, and finds support and guidance through others. Because I remember before she found that support system within teachers, this was back in, say, middle school, she was really, really struggling mentally. She didn't know who she was. She was, I guess what you would call a rebellious teen. And I'm not saying that it's bad to be a rebellious teen in any way. I mean, aren't we all just rebellious at some point? But I think she was just very lost. Truly. And so that's kind of, those are the struggles of, I guess, growing up as a teenager in, like, such a transitory period of time with technology, but also, like, for us being a mixture of Chinese and American and growing up in America with that lens in mind as well. But there's a whole other cohort of people that have felt, are feeling, and will continue to feel social isolation and loneliness throughout history. And those are seniors, senior citizens, elderly people.
I mean, structurally, loneliness is universal. One thing I was reading on is loneliness, this concept and this kind of human experience has been talked about since Gilgamesh, which is just really old, like, literature. Like, really.
Like, not good.
Shout out to not good English. Like, it's really old stuff. And while it's universal, it's, like, perpetuated and exacerbated, right, in elderly populations, but also, you know, in our systems, like, for the people who are relatively, like, poor, because they're isolated by these systems, yes, that, you know, reward making money and, mm-hmm, and things like that. Immigrants, mm-hmm, just by default, most people relating to that group are going to be more lonely. And I think it's important to recognize, like, depending on your identity and your current place, I guess, quote unquote, in society, loneliness is not equal, and it's not the same intensity as it is for other people.
Yeah, no, not at all. And as going back, especially for, say, senior citizens and the elderly, there is a researcher named Elena Porticolone, I believe. And she's done extensive research whenever it comes to loneliness and social isolation within senior citizens. And just kind of the causes of why certain groups of people or certain identities of senior citizens might be more isolated or more lonely than other populations. And she found that in particular, and, you know, this makes sense, in particular, neighborhoods with higher crime rates, senior citizens who live in neighborhoods of higher crime rates tend to be more isolated. You know, causes such as the fear of being robbed and lack of resources like caregivers or home care aides or people that can just help around the house. Like, they don't have access to that because typically these people are low income or have struggled with money for quite a while and can't afford that, those things, can't afford to be robbed, can't afford to leave the house at all. And this causes all of this isolation. And I don't think many people understand the true effects of isolation, like the biological repercussions of being lonely. Because, okay, so again, we can't reiterate this enough apparently this podcast, but we are children of immigrants, and
really good at that.
But, you know, typically immigrants, and especially in Asian culture, don't believe in therapy. Yep. Don't believe, or not that they don't believe in therapy, but that they don't really hold therapy to, and mental health, to as high of a regard as it should be.
Yeah, there's a difference kind of culturally because of collectivism, which is just the idea that you do things for the common good, not for your individual self, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, a characteristic of Western culture. So, I mean, because of collectivism, this general mindset that even if you have a problem for the good of the population, you should be able to overcome it. Yeah. Or, you know, and then that's, I think, why a big part, why mental health and therapy are stigmatized. And also the basis for Eastern or like Asian or like Chinese specifically, like medicine is unique. It's very different. It's, I can't speak too much to it, except for I know that it's kind of very different from how we medicate people, treat people, yeah. view disease in Western culture.
Yeah, no, exactly. And perpetuates the general population to push themselves as much as possible, like to their breaking point, in order to increase efficiency in society, right? Which leads to, as you said before, a decrease in attention and focus in the individual and the mental health of the individual, which is very concerning because as I was doing research on loneliness, I had never realized that loneliness could legitimately biologically make you more weak. So some things I found is that loneliness triggers biological defense mechanisms within the body, which leads to inflammation. And although inflammation is good whenever it comes to, you know, fighting the flu or something like that, it can lead to an over-accumulation of inflammation, which can eventually become the cause of plaque buildup in veins and arteries, or increased rates of cancer cells growing.
Yeah.
And obesity and heart disease and high blood pressure, and loneliness can weaken immune cells. So you have a weakened immune system. And since loneliness is so prevalent in so much of the senior citizens population, and especially right now, a weakened immune system combined with the senior citizen population combined with a pandemic, it's almost a separate epidemic of its own that probably should be addressed.
Yeah, I mean, loneliness in a lot of news outlets and stuff, though, there's been some controversies. Like, loneliness is an epidemic. And I think the larger point to loneliness and the biological, physical ramifications is, like, so often, though now the conversation has been a lot more dynamic and a lot more open to talking about mental health, like, so much of this mindset or evaluation of, like, physical health is always more important than mental health, and kind of how now we're trying to redefine that and reshape that to, you know, mental health is just as important as physical health. I think a lot of the times, you know, when we're taught in school or just in general, like, we see it as two separate things, but really they're all interconnected because your body is all interconnected, right? Your mind, your, like, emotions, your feelings, and your systems, like your skeletal system, like your the cell cycle. I almost failed biology, so I cannot name anymore.
Cellular respiration.
Yeah, I mean,
photosynthesis.
Exactly. These aren't isolated, play off of each other, where that's why you kind of see sometimes people take up exercising as a way for them to prelude their maybe, like, worries or their, like, their deepest stresses and stuff like that. And it's like a cycle, because you better your body, and then maybe you're generally on a mindset level feel better, and it's kind of like a constant feedback loop. Mm-hmm. And something I did want to bring up is because on our Instagram, sometimes we'll do posts that are related to specific days that we think are important that might not get talked about enough. And one of the posts we did on December 1st was World AIDS Day. So why I bring it up is because we talked about structural loneliness, and I think a good example in history of this is whenever HIV and AIDS became known, at least in the United States, there was a lot of stigma, and I know stigma is, like, used a lot, but
it's true.
It wasn't taken seriously.
People were afraid to touch people who had AIDS.
Right, and especially, like, AIDS or, like, HIV, people who had it were most often people of the gay community. And, of course, people were not accepting or inclusive to any degree that's comparable to now. Mm-hmm. I mean, even so, we have so much work to do. But, like, that combined, like, being gay and also combined with having HIV is like a double sort of wall that people enclose you in. And people in that community, in those communities, like, experience, like, extreme social isolation. And, I mean, not only physical in the sense of, like, we talked about, like, that type of loneliness where people just don't come near you or interact with you, but also social, like, people shun, people were very, like, dismissive, very unfriendly, and things like that. Which is why, like, loneliness affects marginalized communities the most, because of, like, the systems and structures and kind of our perceptions and beliefs. And I thought that was something that could be brought up, because we talked about it before, and tying that into, you know, history and kind of looking back now, and even so today.
No, yeah, this puts Princess Diana at a whole new light for me. So, Princess Diana, you know who Princess Diana is, right?
Yep.
Yeah. She went to a hospital and shook the hand of somebody with HIV. And that was, like, the headlines for the world's news. Because people legitimately thought that if you touched somebody with HIV, you would get HIV. And there was just, like, this fear and this stigma around, you know, the gay community being completely disease ridden, and if you touched somebody who was gay or if you touched somebody who had HIV, you would then be tainted. And this is Princess Diana we're talking about. This is, like, the British royal family. Like, they seem to be, like, untouchable. So her landing her hand out and touching somebody with HIV was a huge symbolic feat, but also, and I never thought of this before, but a battle against loneliness and isolation between groups of people.
Yeah, exactly. And if we're going to keep doing connections, which is kind of, like, why we started this whole thing, right? Just, like, how how can you synthesize everything you learn around you and see where it applies? We talked about data governance and privacy, and we talked about, I mean, we've covered technology, never the general concept, but we've touched on technology with research. There hasn't been anything super conclusive on it, but now that we're more connected and there are apps like Facebook where the entire basis is to create these social connections, I mean, we're still lonely. It's something we said, like, whether lonely people are more attracted to the internet or whether the internet actually just makes us more lonely. Either way, like, who cares? I mean, we're still lonely. I think this kind of evolving landscape where we all know we're all virtual on Zoom. We're all virtual on Blackboard Collaborate, in our case, in the classrooms and our workplaces. And with this kind of shifting, growing, digital, streamlined workforce where our ways of life are really being reconsidered, and everyone knows this because everyone's experiencing it, I'm just very curious to see where this takes us and what happens. Because I really believe from, you know, personal experiences with my family and stuff like that, that mental health as a whole, I mean, loneliness is obviously a part of it, is going to be one of the most, like, pressing issues of kind of our generation and more in the future. Like, just as a general, like, anecdote, and we know this, is like, whenever you go on Zoom, I leave feeling, like, very empty, which is okay, but it's hard to feel connection when, you know, somebody's 2 pixels, you can't even see, like, their facial expression, and you're just trying to guess what they're thinking, and you're trying to, like, rebound off of that.
Yeah.
It's almost like when you call someone for the first time, like, not FaceTime, like, call, and you're like, this is the most awkward thing ever, because I have nothing to, like...
You have nothing to kind of take away from that experience.
Like, you don't know if they're going to talk, because you can't see their face, and then you talk, and then it's like, and I feel like same thing's happening, you know, now.
Even with Zoom or FaceTime, there is still a sense of emptiness after you click that leave meeting button or that end FaceTime call, right?
Yeah.
I think I've definitely felt this more than ever these past couple of days.
Yeah.
Kind of like felt the repercussions of this pandemic and being so virtual. But I don't think until now I realized the weight. Like, I always knew that mental health was something that should be cherished and taken care of. You always have to take care of your mental health. But I think it's hard for people to truly understand the repercussions of mental health until it's almost too late, until you start feeling serious effects of it.
Right. This actually is pretty timely because I was trying to, like, think about life. Oh my god, that sounds so, like, I was just, you know,
universe.
Think about, like,
black holes.
The meaning of life. Like, oh my gosh, like, be quiet. But no, like, I was genuinely trying to think about that because, as I said in the very beginning of the podcast, I've never been great with emotions. And past days and, like, these moments have been kind of like coming to terms with how I feel, how I express, and what that really means. And I've never been super, like, emotionally sensitive or, like, very, like, emotionally touched by things.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the people closest around me, my brother went through stuff, and I won't put details, but it was pretty, like, serious. And that, I think, was a big turning point for my family, where my parents, I was lucky, who really embraced, yes, if you feel as if therapy is the best way to go, go for it. If you feel as if you need to see a psychiatrist, go for it. And that was when I felt the gravity of, like, mental health and how, if you don't talk about it, it only puts you in an increasing, like, cycle that just keeps on going and going, where you just feel like you can never get out because you have no one to turn to.
Yes.
And then you still are lonely and you still feel alone and stuff like that.
Exactly.
But I think it's also, like, since we're growing, it's really hard. capture the intensity and stuff of stuff. Because, like, you know...
We're young.
Right.
We're literally young, okay? And, like, like legitimately, we're, like, we're minors, okay? Like, by law, we're young.
Right.
And, like, we can't... It's hard for us. It's hard for us to communicate emotions and, like, truly understand, like, all of these things that we should be able to understand in order to get through this pandemic.
Yeah.
And I think my experience, you know, I'm kind of going through a mental health journey right now.
Right.
Right. So, thank you to the podcast. Thank you to all of you guys listening for, helping me get through this journey.
Yep.
Because legitimately doing research on loneliness truly did help and provide insight into mental health for me. Because I would say that I'm somebody who is very in touch with my emotions, who feels a lot. Like, I wrote one of my college essays on this, but I get chills with almost everything, whether it be good music or, like, a touching commercial or, like, a piece of visual art. Like, oh my gosh, ballerinas are just ballet is, like, it's so pretty. And, oh, it gives me chills. Mm-hmm. But anything with expression. Like, I'm very expressive. Kind of the opposite of you.
Right.
But I still have yet to truly explore the realm of mental health on my own. And I needed to talk to a counselor and friends and kind of consult the internet in researching loneliness and researching other various mental health topics. I'm just at the beginning of my mental health journey, and I think that should be a point that is stated for anybody who hasn't really gone through a mental health journey yet thus far, that I advise you, no matter how in touch with your feelings you are, no matter how many movies you cry to, I cry to Beauty and the Beast, that just tells you how much of, like, oh my gosh, a movie wimp I am, to explore mental health and to understand that loneliness truly is something that everybody feels. If you feel lonely, that you should act upon it. And reach out to those who you love and be like, hey, I feel alone in this and I don't understand why, and I should find the causes of this and understand why I'm thinking these ways.
Yeah. Like what Jenny said about expression, I mean, if you're on the latter end of things, which obviously I relate to, like, you're not as emotional, you just feel less, you express less, just because... I don't know, maybe you that perceive the world through, like, ration, or, like, I don't know, whatever you, however you, you know, go through life. On that end, yeah, I mean, it can be very isolating, because if people around you are very, like, you know, emotional expressive, you might feel like you're less human or some sort of thing like that. I mean...
Which, by the way, completely invalid.
Yeah, taking time to kind of understand your emotions and where you feel is important, and we don't need to tell you that, but it's just a reminder that, right, I mean, we're everyone's going through it, no matter how good your life seems, how good your life is, we're all just trying to figure it out. And the last thing I will say is, yeah, with FaceTime and Zoom, I would say right now in my life, a lot of my friends don't live in the vicinity of Pittsburgh, so a lot of the way I talk to them is through, like, FaceTime or Zoom, right, or some sort of virtual texting or virtual space. And sometimes what I find is, even though they're great, awesome people, there is something different about being physically in a room together, and kind of, there's just a different thing. I mean, that's also the thing with, like, physical isolation. And the last thing I saw about loneliness was how, you know, we use physical isolation as a weapon for, like, a lot of different things. Like, we isolate families, like, across the border. It's just another reminder, loneliness, like anything, is a double sword. Yes, it doesn't feel great whenever you're in it, I mean, if you have chronic loneliness, like, that is a whole nother thing. But just in general, feeling lonely, like, that can perpetuate you to think about your feelings, your relationships, develop a better sense of self, and a better support system. But also, it is very powerful and dangerous and can be very destructive in an on an institutional level.
Yes.
And also on a personal level. So just keep that in mind.
Before we end, I think I want to touch on the fact that there are just so many different contributing factors to being lonely. Like, in no way, shape, or form is it your inherent fault for feeling loneliness. Like, you cannot at all blame yourself. The heritability of loneliness is around 37 to 55%, which means that perhaps it was its outside reasons as to why you feel lonely, but there might be a genetic reason as to why you feel lonely. And reaching out is never a bad option. And on that note, let's end the podcast. So make sure to follow us on our Instagram, which is, again, at Stuff We Don't Learn in School. And we touched on our Instagram this podcast about how we post digital content. And make sure to sign up for our newsletter, which is stuffwedontlearninschool.org. At the very bottom of the webpage, you can just plug in your email and you'll get a newsletter. And the ending quote for this podcast, would you like to say it?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I know Jenny usually says it, but I am telling you, wow. I love media. We love consuming that. But over quarantine, I used my friend's Hulu account, and I found the show Atlanta. I literally don't know how I did. It was something like, I thought Donald Glover was super cool. Childish Gambino, for those of you who aren't familiar with him, but he's a musician. I mean, he's an actor. He's so talented. The show Atlanta is this surreal show where it tries to show the experience of being Black in the United States. And it's so dynamic. Each episode is different. It's engaging and it's challenging, and it forces you to think through the means of humor, really well-written plots, kind of metaphors for each character, or like what they represent on a larger scale. So too long didn't read, just watch the show if you can. Like, I will lend you my Hulu account. But this is a quote from Darius in the show. And Darius, according to Reddit, is like this character that symbolizes luck and this sort of fluidity of life and carefreeness. And he's really cool. Not all great things come from great pain. Sometimes it's love. Not everything is a sacrifice.
As always, Stuff We Don't Learn in School would not be possible without our team. Thank you to Victoria Wren for writing the newsletter, Sophie Liu for the resources, Emma Scott for the digital content, and Gloria Wong for the graphic design.